ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, this is comedian and depressed alcoholic James Nokise, and you're listening to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a podcast about headspace and happiness from my safe place, The Shower, with fried chicken. This episode, I'm talking to Billy T Award-winning comedian, actor, and mental health advocate, Corey Gonzalez-McCure. We'll talk about what it's like to be an actor.
Not theatre, I'll never be friends with theatre people. But
what it's like to be a movie star.
Someone messaged me saying, oh, it's the number one movie in New Zealand. I didn't have any money, and I think I got enough money to go get like a $5 pizza from somewhere, and that's how I celebrated, just with a $5 pizza in my room, in my mum's house.
And what it's like to be a dad.
Mungo Mob had, and if Freddie was there, I'd feel...
Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure you're in a safe space, with your comfort food. And join us, Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower. Corey Gonzalez-McCure, a man who I have Hello. Known since most of my comedy career.
Yep, yep. And 2000, I've known you before, or we've known each other before I started doing comedy.
Yeah, because we were at uni in...
2002.
In theatre? Yeah. We did the theatre degree at Victoria University. Yep. Back when it meant something, eh, bro?
Yeah, because we had steady work from then on till now. Yeah,
we met because we were about a year apart in stand up.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I think you got me into it. I think you, because everyone knew that you were doing comedy in the first year of at uni.
Yeah,
and then we used to go along to the shows. That's right, and that's how I met Hurley and Wrigley and stuff.
Yeah. And then you were like, I'm way funnier than that guy.
Won't say who I was talking about, but.
Full disclosure, Corey and me did our very first comedy festival together, which was a show called Overstayers. Overstaying with Corey and James, sponsored by Overstayer Clothing with King Capisi.
Yeah.
I don't think Capisi and that came and saw the show.
No one did. No,
no one came and saw the show. No. In a couple of half hours, no idea what we're doing.
With the good old time of 5 p.m. in Auckland.
5 p.m. in Auckland. In the basement, I think. Yeah. Do we have a hip-hop crew? I feel like we had...
In Auckland. Did you know someone? I can't remember. We had a hip-hop crew in Wellington.
Who stole the show. Yeah, who, like, wait. Here's a little tip. If you're going to have a hip-hop crew in your stand-up comedy show, don't have a really sharp hip-hop crew when you're not really sharp comedians.
Yeah. Every review said that we were shit. Like, yeah. Odious.
How do you cope with feedback like that?
I take it really personally, still.
Yeah?
Yes. Maybe not as bad now, but it depends who's doing it. If it's like a big reviewer, then I'll be like, okay, you might know what you're talking about. But if it's some fucking like 18-year-old student who's never been to a comedy show trying to review something for their local student magazine, I'm like who are you? Like,
do you ever engage?
I try not to. I used to, but I try not to now.
Yeah.
Just don't read them when you're hungover or still drunk.
What kind of chicken we got? You said spicy chicken.
It's Japanese.
Okay.
And it's got chipotle mayo, but...
Are you a big fan of spicy chicken?
Yeah, I say that, but then I always get it way too hot and I can't eat it.
Yum. Good?
Really good. Oh, yeah, it's good.
Don't eat it off the floor now.
I'm drunk.
Oh, my God. Gonzalez, what are you doing? We're supposed to be professional comedians.
Oh, sorry, we can cut that out.
you like when it comes to cleanliness and that you do like I've seen you send food back when there's an eyelash or something.
Oh, would you eat it if there was an eyelash?
I mean,
when it comes to stuff like that, if I find a hair in my food, I'll go a week without eating probably. I'll never go back to where that place was. It's just, you can't do that.
What happens? What happens to you in those moments,
it's
bro?
Gross. Do you remember at Vic Uni, there was, at the recreation center, the cafe there, that was that dude that had very long orange hair?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he had, like, a slur. He spoke like, osh. I got some wedges once, and it was a massive, like massive long ginger hair. And I took it up, and he denied that it was his.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's I mean, it's a bold denial on his part.
Yeah, like, not me.
But no, not big on like hair. Just someone.
Nah,
someone
no way. Hair. Anything like that? Yeah. No.
Yeah. I've always found that fascinating because I was like, man, I just eat it like it's just really? Just the eyelash. But yeah, that certainly it hits you, eh?
Yeah.
That's right. That's why I'm like, just eat whatever you
most
want.
Most people listening will be like, does James eat hair?
I feel like this is
he thinks it's fine.
Because
okay.
we've been going for a long time now.
Yeah.
Like, do you ever think about like those early days and like go, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, I don't know, I really like those days.
Yeah.
I was just so new to it, and even the people who were experienced back then, people who I thought were, you know, even like as far as the Concords and Tiger and Hurley and stuff, even I look back now, they were like new to the whole thing.
Yeah.
There was no TV in New Zealand, like no comedy on TV really. Everybody was just on the same boat doing live shows and hanging out at Indigo.
I remember Hurley once said something to me about you which stuck, was that you don't talk much, but when you do, it's really good.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think hopefully that still goes, that still applies.
Because you're quite introverted.
Maybe, depends how drunk I am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's true, actually. I have a recall some memories of that, too.
Yeah, it's not as bad as it used to be, but yeah.
Was it about, like...
I'm not drunk now.
But do you, did you drink to, like... to get extroverted, or was it just a side effect?
I think I definitely did to get extroverted, and then after a while I just did it because I just had to drink, and it became just a natural thing.
Yeah, all right. Right. Do you have a thing where, because you're an immigrant?
Yeah.
Aren't you?
Get out!
Was on the chart of immigrants, but you came over here, and again, I didn't notice until...
Were you born here? I thought you came...
No. People just assume because I played a race card so hard that I must be from overseas. No, I was born in Hamilton, though.
Oh, really?
Mm. But my parents are both immigrants.
Yeah.
Whereas you, how old were you in Cameron?
6.
Does that give you, like, perspective?
I just think of how awesome New Zealand is. We're quite lucky to come here. And I always think of, like, what would happen if we'd stayed in Chile? Like,
because when people think of Chile, they generally think football, beaches, occasional devastating earthquake.
Yep. Yeah, so yeah, there was a war, like a military coup in 1973, and that lasted through till like 1990, I think, and we moved here in 1988. So we kind of lived through the whole thing of it. I was born in 82, but like when it was kind of really bad. We came here and that's why I think New Zealand's just the best country in the world. Like every time I see something in the news that's meant to be big news, I'm like, I remember a couple of years ago, the headline was that a rooster got run over somewhere in a small town. I was like, rooster gets run over. And I was like, fuck, we're so lucky.
Because I've got impressions of memories.
Yeah.
From when I'm 6. Like, I've got somewhere like 5. Maybe the earliest I can go back is 4.
Oh, yeah.
But have you got still, because your childhood was so traumatic in those circumstances, have you still got, like, real crystallized memories?
A little bit. I wouldn't say it was that traumatic, but definitely things like being in town and seeing protests.
Yeah.
But when my uncle got arrested, I remember that day, like, everyone just losing the plot.
Yeah.
My dad leaving. So my dad came here, like, a year and a half before we came over.
Right.
Because I remember that, like, vividly.
Was it different growing up in New Zealand, like, as an immigrant, like, coming from that kind of place? Or did you just, like, because you came over so young, sort of assimilate in?
Yeah, I think we just did. We just assimilated quite well. I can't even remember not being able to understand what was going on, because I didn't speak English when I came here.
Right.
But I can't... Yeah, like, the transition was just... I remember always being able to understand and speak English here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know when I first got here and... kids probably would have made fun of me, but I would have not known what was happening.
Well, I mean, you're also quite a magnificent football player, soccer player, so I feel like...
Well, it used to be.
Yeah, I just do it, not playing anymore?
I haven't touched a soccer ball for, like, 15 years, maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
God damn.
Still have nightmares every night about that I should be playing it.
Really?
Yeah, kills me.
Really?
Yeah.
Why are you having...
And in my head, if I started training, I reckon I could still probably, like, play for Barcelona.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it still the dream still alive?
Give it a year, I could do it.
Keen soccer player in high school?
Yeah. So that's my pretty much everything I did at high school was just play football. Yeah, I was just the quiet guy who played soccer.
So how'd you get into, like, no, not how. I know how. I was there. Why? Why did you get drawn to drama and public speaking?
I don't know. I don't know.
Because even then, what I love about, like, your social circle is you have, like, the most un-arts socials. Like, when you and your crew rock up at a gig,
yeah,
it's great because it's immediate diversity to the normal arts crew.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I like. I just kind of, it was just something that I've always probably had inside me. That's why I was so quiet. And when I did it was just awesome. And that's why I've got, like, friends in the comedy industry, friends who are, you know, do acting, not theatre. I'll never be friends with theatre people. But, you know, friends who do, like, tattooists, and then friends who just work in offices. Like,
yeah.
And then friends who are just unemployed or, like, gang members or drug dealers.
Well, I mean, it's New Zealand. We all know a few gang members and drug dealers. Is that important to you, having a rounded social circle?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's what I've never understood about people who just hang out in one clique of, like, friends. I've never got that ever. Brunch out.
Do you reckon that comes from being in, like, an immigrant and adjusting, or do you think? Yeah,
yeah, totally. Yeah, maybe just from being an outsider.
Eating fried chicken in the shower, whether you're with old friends, new friends, or by yourself.
I don't know if, like, you're aware, but you're quite well known in New Zealand.
I don't know. Maybe I go through stages. But
you go through stages?
Maybe, like, when What We Do in Shadows came out, that was probably. But I don't know. I don't think anyone's, like, famous in New Zealand.
No?
No. Probably Peter Jackson, maybe, but in Concord's.
How do those moments sit with you when you've been at the top of the wave in fame?
I don't know, you kind of, I don't know if you miss it, you just kind of, yeah, there's just, like, some stuff, like, going to Sundance and stuff, and like the Berlin Film Festival, those, I look back at those and I just don't think they'll ever be able to do that again. So you miss it a bit, and but you always just kind of look back on it, like, you know, like, pretty lucky that I got to do that. Like, I don't know many people who even get to be in a movie. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Is it stressful at the time? Like, do you have that kind of...
No, not really. What, like, if I'm going to... Something like that's going to happen again?
Or, yeah, yeah.
No, maybe for a bit. I thought, like, what am I going to do now? But, yeah, it's kind of less and less these days. I think just because of, like, my daughter and got a bit more work going on. So it's not like I'm just sitting in my mum's room, in my mum's house in my room, like, wondering when someone's going to call me, ask me if I can be in something.
Was that a genuine thing?
Did you... Totally. When I, yeah, after What We Do in the Shadows, I pretty much did that for till Freddie was born.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I had no idea, man.
Yeah, I just never, I didn't do anything productive. Yeah, I was just kind of waiting. I was like, yeah, something's going to happen, but yeah.
Oh, so you just sat back and went, I mean,
pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great film. Yeah. I think I watched it with the Prime Minister.
Actually. Oh, really?
It wasn't Prime Minister at the time, but yeah, sat next to the Prime Minister and who enjoyed it very much, as
great.
I recall.
What's she up to?
I don't know, some sort of busy schedule these days.
Oh, yeah.
So when you're sitting in your mum's house and you have the number one film in New Zealand, like, what's that like, bro? Like, what's it when, where's your head at?
I remember because I was in my room, and then someone messaged me saying, oh, it's the number one movie in New Zealand, and I didn't have any money, and I think I had enough money to go get like a $5 pizza from somewhere, and that's how I celebrated, just with a $5 pizza in my room in my mum's house. Yeah, I was watching TV.
Do you get depressed in those moments, or does you just have that perspective?
Yeah, that's awesome. Like... That's awesome, I reckon.
I mean, because if you take away, like, the grandness of the thing, I mean, everyone loves having a $5 pizza in their mum's place.
Oh, I'll have a $5 pizza here after this.
Sounds good. It's the next series. We'll branch out. So we have $5 chicken pizza, pizzas.
Yeah. In your mum's room.
In your mum's. That's the rival podcast.
Yeah, is it?
I think it's you. I think it's Corey Gonzalez McCure.
Maybe.
$5 pizza's at my mum's place. Like, competition. But... like when you, so you've got What We Do in Shadows. Are you involved at all in the TV program, the thing in the States?
No, not the States one, but I've written a couple of episodes for the Wellington Paranormal.
Oh, for Wellington Paranormal. Mm. Oh, that's cool, man. Is it interesting that when you see something like Shadows go big overseas, like how does your ego sit when you see the other members and they're like going over to America? Are you sitting there? It's like, yo, that's my mates, that's cool. Or is there a bit of, like, envy?
Or? No, not at all. It's my friends, that's cool. And, like, it couldn't happen to better people.
Yeah.
And it's literally, they did all this on their own. Like, they never, You know, it wasn't like all about who you know, but they wrote everything by themselves. They even like funded some of it themselves. So they've been doing it for ages. Like we know them. Like they've been doing it for for fucking longer than like over 20 years.
I think I remember the Shadows skit from the Concord's.
Yeah, they did it at Indigo. Yeah.
As having a daughter, because you are a dad now, which is like a massive difference between our lives, because I feel like our lives kind of were like going at parallels, but you've gone off and become a dad.
Yeah, sorry.
It's all right, bro. I feel... and your daughter's amazing.
Yeah, she's cool. She's in the car now. But
That's right. We'll speed it up. We'll speed it up. But do you... Like, does that anchor you? Like, does that... Like, both mentally, but also physically, it keeps you here in New Zealand. But not out of necessity, but about wanting to be here. But does it sort of anchor you as well?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it, like, physically keeps me in Auckland because she's here and her mum's here and her mum and I are still really good friends. But, yeah, mentally more than anything, like, especially lately, like the last year or so, it's really kind of, like, me and her, our bond is even better. Like, when she was born, I was still going through some stuff and I don't think I was the best dad for, like, a few years. But then I just had to get my shit together and, I've just been doing that for the last month. Like, she just comes before everything.
Can you elaborate on being... like what it means to be like a bad dad and become a good dad?
I mean, I don't know if I was a bad dad. Like I was with her all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think I was just going out every night. So me and Anna, her mum, we were living together. Mm. So I just took it for granted that Anna was there and I'd go out all the time. Or I'd just be hungover the next day, wouldn't be able to look after Freddie properly. Just lots of stuff that I could have done better.
Because our industry lends itself to those kind of happenings, though.
Yeah.
I remember when we were coming up, that's what you did.
Yeah.
Like, you did the gig every week, and then after the gig, everyone went out.
Yeah.
Do you feel that the industry has changed in the 700 years that we've been doing this?
Yeah, I think, most of us like have families now or... big jobs, but I have, you know, are busier. I think that's definitely changed. I don't think anyone would like to still be doing that, like getting paid $40 a week and then spending it all afterwards getting wasted at the bar.
Because it's mentally deteriorating a bit when you've like go, this is my career, but it's not really your career because you're just earning $40, which is your bar tab.
Yeah. You were literally just... Yeah, you go through stages where you're literally just doing it just so you can drink. That's what I felt. I got to a point where I was just doing comedy just so I could have money to drink.
At what point do you go, I need to make this a career?
I don't know. I think I thought that when I moved to Auckland for the first time. And then it was had a few bits and pieces, but it was never like a full-on career.
You were on TV, though. Like, I mean, I was overseas at the time, but
I did, but it still wasn't enough to make a living, so I wasn't doing bits and pieces. And then I was like, right, I should probably just go back and finish my degree. And then the Shadows came around, and I went to Wellington and then stayed there to finish my degree, film degree, which is paid for itself. Like,
I feel like you paid for itself before you got the degree.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it stressful though, bro? Like with the perception and the reality of, you know, because you're on TV. I don't know if this is just a Kiwi thing, but you're on TV and you're in films and they're successful films and they're successful TV shows. And so people go, well, you must be rolling.
Yeah, totally. But everyone knows it's not like that. Not everyone in the industry knows.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
But when you like got Joe Public out there, like how do you deal with people like that?
I'm just honest. I'm like, I literally got... And I'll always be like precise. I tell them how much money I've got in my bank account.
Oh, amazing.
Really, I've got, sorry, man, I can't, I've got $13 in my bank account. Or, and then they usually buy you drinks.
That's a good move. I don't think I've ever tried.
I've done it for a while, but yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever tried blatant honesty.
Oh, just blatant honesty about everything.
Yeah?
Yeah. Maybe not everything, but.
Well, yeah, but where's that come from? Is that like just a...
I don't know. It's kind of like, I saw something the other day that said Kiwis are always, if you compliment them on their clothing, they're always the quickest people to point out how much they cost because they don't want to be like, oh, you're too, like, nice t-shirts. Like, it's only $5. $5, everyone. Everyone relax. It's only $5.
It's That's depressingly true because I did that on Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I said, Matt, you look really good on stage. And I literally walked them through what every item I was wearing cost.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, shoes, number one warehouse, this, yeah. Hallensteins, yeah. This I got for free. Yeah. They're like, whoa, like, that's right.
Yeah.
I love a buck.
Yeah, awesome.
Do you have arrogance, though? Do you have moments of arrogance?
I think so. I think as comedians, we probably all have that.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting up on stage doing stuff that we think people are going to laugh at.
Yeah, or you offered to mentor someone who's only like 12 gigs ahead of you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, by the way, James was my mentor when I first started.
Don't even.
You can mentor me now if you
want. I mentored Corey too well. He bet me for the Billy T Award in 2006. But can I ask, like, when you do have those great moments, what's it like for your family? You know, you've got away from, you know, this big situation in Chile. You've come over here. Like, did your parents have expectations for you guys, or did they just like have a happy life?
Growing up, they definitely wanted us to go to uni and play football was the main thing, and then like kind of gave up on football.
Yeah.
Like, go to uni, do politics, get an office job.
Yeah.
Make money, but then they saw that I was kind of wasn't doing that because I was getting into comedy. It was a bit funny for them, but then they saw that I was actually getting good at it.
Yeah.
They fully supported me like all the way.
Yeah,
I got to a certain point where they're like, "All right, he's going to do this."
And is it still like the are they great moments for you when like you see like you know if your mum's watching Shadows or like
Totally yeah. Or like my mum's saying people at her work are talking about it or stuff like that. Or, yeah, it's always really nice.
Eating fried chicken in the shower, whether you're with old friends, new friends, or by yourself.
Our lives coming back to paralleling again. Mm. We both were doing shows this year on trauma. And personal trauma.
Yeah.
Do you want to speak to what your show was about?
Yeah, so my dad died in 2013. He committed suicide. And I always wanted to do a show about like depression or mental health, but I never really had the guts to do it. So I think I did 3 festivals after he died. And every year I said, okay, I'm going to do this one about mental health, but I never did it. So I took 3 years off, and I came back this year, and I was finally like ready to talk about it, and yeah, I did it, and it's probably the best festival I've had, I reckon. Yeah, so I'm glad I did it.
How does it feel to be able to speak it and speak it publicly?
It feels good. Yeah, it feels really good. It's, in a way, it's kind of almost like therapy for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the thing about trauma and taking about 3 years?
No.
There's a thing where when someone goes through a heavy trauma, particularly a close death. The mourning process is around 3 years, and it doesn't mean that everything stops.
Yeah.
But around after 3 years, things are a little lighter.
And
some people do wake up one day and they just feel that the blanket is off them.
Yeah.
I don't know where you're at with yours, bro. But
at the moment, I think I'm good. Or I'm definitely better. But there's days when I still have that blanket, but they're definitely few and far between. Yeah. Instead of being, you know, every day of the week, now they're once every fortnight.
Your mum came and saw the show?
Yeah. Yeah, she loved it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was cool.
What's it mean to you?
Just how far we've come. I think a couple of years, if I'd done my show 4 or 5 years ago, no one in my family would have been able to handle what I talked about. But now, like my sister came, my mum came. They liked it. Yeah, I think it's we've come a long way in terms of how easy we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask, my stuff I've been talking about suicide, but I do it from a very different angle because it's my suicide.
Yeah.
Yours is from, I think, somewhere that we don't necessarily hear enough about. And it's part of the reason I was so glad you were doing a show about it. Because you're coming from the point of view of the person who is connected to the person who commits suicide and the trauma of that.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that, bro?
I just think it's, first of all, it sucks that I was put in a place where I had that something that I did a show about. Like, I would much rather have just done a show about fucking Kiwis who think they're famous. But
I look forward to that show next year.
Next year, I'll make a return of it. But I think. But now that I'm there, it's good. My dad can't speak for himself anymore, and although I am angry sometimes, I can just kind of say, explain why he and why other people do it, maybe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like he doesn't, so I guess I'm his voice now that he doesn't have one.
What do you do with the anger, bro, when it rises up?
Depends where I am and who I'm with, or if I'm drunk or not. But I've been a bit calmer lately. But yeah, back in the day, I used to just whatever I was, like, well, I would just wouldn't think about consequences about anything.
Yeah.
I just drink, I'd fucking ruin jobs, I'd burn bridges.
What's it like when you are taking enough space from burning those bridges?
Yeah.
To realize you've burned them. What does that do to you?
Oh, just embarrassed. Yeah, you feel like shit, you regret it. You wish you could take it back, but you know, you can't.
This one's a bit of a personal one as well, as opposed to the other ones. But you know, I impersonate my old man all the time. I remember you used to have a few jokes where you'd drop into your old man as well. And they're great jokes. Do you still use them?
Not really. It's got nothing to do with... I don't do them because I'm... You know, I miss my dad. Mm. I just don't do them because I don't think they're funny anymore.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I have not arrived at that professional level yet.
There's just, a lot of them just don't even make sense, like, if you broke them down. But I talk to him heaps, about him heaps, but those jokes that I did at the very start, and also impersonating him, I used to impersonate, like, Chinese people. Like, I was really racist when I started out.
Right, really?
I think I was. Like, my first ever gig, I started off by impersonating the guy at my local fish and chip shop, and it was me for like 3 minutes talking like a Chinese person.
Oh my gosh, I completely blanked that.
So did I. Let's hope the spin-off doesn't get hold of that video.
I'm sure that there's already an article.
Yeah, probably. It just came out now.
How do you process that? Because I think that's something that we definitely don't hear about. It's like when you look back on your back catalogue and go,
Now I'm just, like I'd never ever even think about doing stuff like that. And at the time, like, I never thought that it was offensive or, you know, I've never had, like, I've always grown up thinking I don't have a racist bone in my body, but now that I look back, that was, stuff like that was really bad. Or, like, pretending that I was, like, a Osama bin Laden or a terrorist, like, stuff like that would just be, like, now, especially now, it would just be, I would never do stuff like that.
Does it make it easier for you to do comedy, reconciling that kind of stuff?
Not really, because those are all my jokes, so I've got no material now.
what's it like to be doing a show about your dad? Can I ask about the beginning process of that?
Show?
When you're first trying to tell it.
I don't even know. I always had it in my head that I wanted to do it, and then I'd write little bullet points about what I'd say, and I just struggled with whether I wanted to make the whole show about that or where I'd put the mental health stuff in the show. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I think the main thing was just putting it in the right order and where it would be and how much of it I'd use. And it just happened this time around. I just kind of, probably not even like a month out from the festival, I got it right. And as soon as I got that right, everything just fell into place. I hadn't done the festival for years, so I had like a lot of material I had ready. I just don't know how I'd center it, put the mental health stuff around it. And once I did that, I just had like probably the most chilled out month leading up to the festival that I've ever had.
Do you find now that you're talking publicly about mental health that people come to you with mental health issues they need to discuss?
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, it happens a lot, especially the show. After every show, I'd get messages from people. Or even if I go out of town or like go to schools or like go to sometimes like hospitals and stuff, and I'll do a talk. There's always people that come up to you afterwards. Random people on the street might come up to you. So I think that's something that we kind of, you probably know, we're getting ourselves into it, so we can't really, there's times where I don't want to reply to anyone, I don't want to talk to anyone about it, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, take some time out when you feel a bit better and go through your messages, or, if somebody stops you in the street, have a chat with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you go to hospitals, can I ask?
I was really hospitals just for a mate of mine who ran some seminar for Auckland Hospital. Mm. I think it was maybe like a mental health seminar, and I went in and talked to them about stuff. Yeah.
And is that part of your healing process as well, like going in and doing that kind of work?
Or? Yeah, it is. At the start, before I go in, I dread it. And I still do sometimes, but once I'm up there and then talking to people afterwards, it's awesome.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Sometimes it's comfort chicken. Sometimes it's healing chicken.
You have this traumatic thing with your father.
Yep.
And now you're a father yourself.
Yeah.
Does it help you understand?
Yeah.
Like I can.
Growing up, I'd see my dad be stressed out about having no money or no food, and now I've got like nowhere near the stresses that he was like when he was my age. He had 3 kids already. But I was about to start uni when he was my age, so I put myself in his shoes and I can understand what he went through, I'm just thankful that it's not as hard. And when I think it is hard, I think about that. And at the end of the day, I've got like a healthy daughter who's awesome, and I've got an awesome relationship with her mum. And that's all I can really ask for. So it's up to me to not fuck it up.
Yeah. Are you the eldest?
Yep.
Can I ask about like...
Out of Freddie and her mum?
No. but you know, when what happened with your old man happened, like, are you the eldest then? Are you the person who has to step up?
I think so. At the time, I think we all had to a little bit, but around that time, I definitely think I did. And then my brother stepped up by moving back to, he was living in Australia, he moved back to New Zealand to be with my mum, and he's only just moved out. So my sister was there, like she dropped everything, she moved here for a while. So everyone stepped up.
And it sounds like when you say your brother's just moved out, it sounds like your family is healing and has come to a...
Yeah, everyone's healing in their own way.
What was the priority of your mum? Because it sounds like what it was.
I think the priority was everybody at some stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at the start it was definitely my mum. Yeah.
Because that's often the thing with family trauma, isn't it? So that's sort of, I've found in my own experience with family trauma, it flows through.
Yeah.
So you do focus on a different person.
Yeah, hard. Yeah, yeah.
What did you do when it was your turn?
I kind of think, like, it might have been my turn. I think it was me throughout for like 4 years, and nobody really, because I was living in Auckland, so nobody really kind of knew what I was getting up to. But then eventually they did, and yeah, so... Probably not up until that, maybe a year and a bit ago. All the attention was on me.
Did the what about your work friends, your comedy friends? I'm not trying to say anything about anyone. I'm just saying, like, in that kind of situation, they're the people around you. You know, when you're away from your family, your work family becomes your family.
Yeah.
Did they notice? Did they see or anything?
Yeah, a few of them kind of brought it up, like saying maybe like don't do that and don't do too much of that. Like 100%. Like my comedian friends have probably been the people who've been closest to me throughout the whole thing.
Does that make a difference to you, having that?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of people who I didn't realise were that good of friends, like when all that happened, I found out who was, you know, people who really cared.
What does that look like, people who really care?
A lot of people say, oh, you got to talk to your mates or whatever, but I think it's just the mates who listen more than talk. Like, as you know, I'm not a big talker, so even little things, just hanging out with someone, not having to talk much, just having their company. The friends who kind of understood that, kind of knew the boundary where not to be too full on about, you know, being sorry about stuff, or, you know, people who didn't even mention it.
I am sorry I'm making you talk so much, bro, but, you know.
Yeah, I know, that's the most I've talked. Like 7 years.
So, well, you know, it's everyone gets tired of hearing my shit. How do you get defragged? Even from like something like this, when even one of your old mates goes, "Hey, bro, come in the shower and just empty all your trauma on me."
Yeah.
What do you do to defrag, declutter, get your head straight?
After this, you mean?
After this, but after doing the show, you've just done 10 days. Talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
What's your healing?
It's a bunch of things. I think hanging out with Freddie, obviously, is awesome. I'll always talk to my mum after every show. I've told Charlie, I'm the producer, been listening to heaps of like serial killer podcasts lately. So
why serial killer podcasts?
I don't know. I just obsess with them. Like, I literally go home after, instead of going out partying, I'll go home to finish my podcast. So yeah, stuff like that. We'll just go for runs, or we'll go to the gym, or watch soccer on TV. Cook.
Yeah?
Yeah, we'll just go for a long drive somewhere or something.
And what's a safe place for you these days? Like, what feels... Mm. When do you feel safest?
I don't know. I think my last week in Wellington, my whole family was there. They came over from where they live. So my sister was there, my brother was there, my mum was there. And I flew down with Freddie for the week. And then for 3 days, Anna, Freddie's mum, came down. So it was all of us together. And that was like that. Yeah, that week was probably the best week I've had in a long time. Just, yeah.
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 So it's about the people who are there.
Oh, definitely people.
Could it be anywhere?
Anywhere, yeah. It could be
as long as those people. Yeah,
Mungo Mob had, and if Freddie was there, I'd feel... So I want to get out, but... Yeah.
Look, we teased him, but I think the Mungo Mob would be good babysitters in that scenario.
Yeah, I guess so. Yep.
Where's my daughter? It's right here, bro.
Yeah.
Right here. We've got a little vest for her.
It's a strict 6:30 bedtime.
Yeah. With your ink, because that's something we also have in common, and something that's come up through our adulthood. Is your ink a way of expression? Is that?
Yeah, I think so. At the start, maybe now it's just kind of like I just really like getting tattoos. Like, most of them don't even have meanings anymore.
Yeah,
yeah. It's just I just like the pain sometimes.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Is it any tie to mental health?
I think it's definitely very therapeutic. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
Is your brother's a tattooist, isn't he?
Yeah. He's. Yeah, he hasn't done it for a while now, but he was a tattooist.
He's done a few of yours, though, right?
Yeah, he's done heaps.
Is that pressure when your brother's doing your tat to not go...
No, I think it's just awesome that he did it. Even if they don't turn out that well, it's like, oh, you know, my little brother did it in our kitchen. You know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's a bonding moment.
Yeah.
I guess we ask this of everyone before we wrap up. Is there anything else that you'd like to share in the shower while you're here, bro?
Wash your legs. Did you see that came out in the news a couple of weeks ago?
No, what?
Where they said that apparently like 90% of people don't wash their legs or soap. Because when you think about it, does anybody wash their legs or soap?
I mean, sometimes. I can't say I do it every time. Sometimes I skip legs.
Yes, I do that. Or if you're like me, you know, the water helps and the tears.
What else would it say? If you're going to cry, cry in the shower.
Cry in the shower, yeah.
Cry in the shower.
Yeah.
Well, Corey Gonzalez-McCure, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Coming in here, eating chicken. Glad we could feed you.
Yep.
Feel free to take the rest of the chicken.
I will, if that's okay.
That's absolutely fine,
but it's yours. Are you sure you didn't put
it here? No, it's fine, okay, man. We got to keep you actors fed, bro. Actor comedians. Thank you very much, bro.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you for having me.
Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower was produced by Charlie Bleakley and presented by me, James Nokise. The engineer is Blair Stagpole. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. Subscribe to our podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for the chicken. And when you're rating us, only give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your safe space or comfort food, tweet me at James Nokise. If you need support, text 1737. Or for more resources on mental health, check the Fried Chicken webpage on the RNZ website. Faftailava Matewa.
Here at RNZ, we want to continue to deliver independent, high-quality content for all New Zealanders, and we're keen to hear from you. So we've set up a new research community called Your Media Matters. It's a place where you can share your views about program or content ideas, podcasts and topical issues. We'd love you to join. To sign up, head to rnz.co.nz/yourmediamatters.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.